When we got home, I found Edward and Cuthbert out in the orchard. Cuthbert was trying to teach Edward how to fire a bow. Edward could never get the idea. The problem was that, although he was fearsomely strong, he was clumsy and a bit of an oaf, really, and he could not manage to get the hang of aiming it. Arrows would fly out in random directions. As I approached, I heard a twang, and then Cuthbert screamed at me to drop. I did so, and felt the arrow shaft pass by my ear. Standing back up, I glared at my big friend, who looked back at me, aghast, his face pale and his hand shaking. "Sorry, Curdick," he said at last. Then, passing the bow rather sheepishly to Cuthbert, added, "Look, luck, you better have this, Cuth. I don't think I'll ever quite get the hang of it." Cuthbert was also shaking gently, and he, still staring at me, just nodded. "Anyway, forget all about that, and let me tell you about Firebrand." So, this was how it was. The three of us soaked up any news of war and battle like a sponge. More than that, we were of an age when we needed heroes. Firebrand might be Bernician, but he was still English, my race, and he had defeated an overwhelming army of Welsh in the last-ditch battle to defend a tiny spit of land which was all that remained of his kingdom. He was then my father's age, and fearsomely strong. Rumours spread that he was merciless in battle. Over the following years he pursued his enemies with an almost holy zeal. No Bernician opposed him. He unified the Anglo-Saxon kingdom, and forged a powerful army that he now led to ravage the lands of Reged. My friends laughed and cheered at the story I told them. Then we got the wooden swords and shields and practiced a little. Suddenly, I became aware that we were not alone. Aidan was sitting on a fence nearby watching us, and we fell silent, although we had no reason to. We were free men, and in my case I was the son of the Lord, whilst he was just a slave, and yet we felt awkward near him. "Aidan," I said, but was then at a loss as to what to go on and say. It was Aidan that broke the silence. "I heard what you were talking about Firebrand and Owain." "That's right, Firebrand is going to kill Owain and defeat the Welsh for good." Aidan actually laughed. It was the first time I could recall him doing so. Then he boldly walked forward and picked up one of the wooden saws and examined it. Edward looked darkly at him. Slaves were not allowed swords, and it seemed wrong somehow for him to pick up even a practice one. Suddenly, he swung the sword round and pointed at my throat. "Owain will kill Firebrand, and then come and kill every angle between the mountains and the sea. Then I will be lord of the villa," he said, and smiled. He was teasing us, goading us with words he knew would challenge us. I looked at my friends and winked at them, and as one we brought our swords up and lunged at Aidan. Aidan had not trained alongside us, of course, but he was fast on his feet and moved to the side and caught, of all people, Cuthbert a clip on the back of the head and laughed as he trotted past. "See what I mean? You English are a sorry lot if an untrained slave can beat you." Edward bellowed at that and charged a Welsh boy, who slipped and fell but, in so doing, dodged my friend, who ended up floundering in a ditch. Now it was my turn. Aidan got back to his feet, picked up his sword and eyed me warily, weighing up this new opponent. We circled each other, both looking for that chance opening or error to seize upon. He looked the part, I'll give him that. Not allowed to train in warfare as we had he spent lonely hours watching us, listening to Grettir and taking it all in. Unnoticed, even ignored, had he picked this up just by himself? If so, he was a fast learner. Aidan moved first, lunging with his sword at my throat. I flinched back, then brought my sword up to block the move. Aidan was fainting, however, and recovered his balance faster than me, and now angled his blade down towards my belly. Yes, Aidan was good, but I still knew a thing or two. I twisted violently and let Aidan's momentum carry him by, fetching him a sharp tap on the backside as he passed. Edward howled with laughter as the slave ended up on his knees. "Enough!" bellowed a voice from behind me. I did not need to look to know it was Grettir. I looked anyway, and saw that he was not staring at me, but at Aidan, and with eyes which now blazed with anger. We all fell silent, and I could feel the gloom descend, like the feeling in the air when a thunderstorm closes in. "So what is going on, boy?" he said to Aidan. "Are you bothering your betters? Need I get the birch again, or the noose?" He emphasised the last word by slapping the dagger out of Aidan's hand. I knew Grettir, and how much he valued tradition and custom. My father felt the same way. I was treading on thin ice, but I did what I should have done before. I spoke out for Aidan. Aidan is helping us train Grettir. He's pretty good and can make a fine warrior, given the chance. Grettir's eyebrows bristled like the fur on the back of an agitated cat. That's not what he's done, you know that, Master Curdic. My heart was pounding from something close to terror, but I knew that what I did next was critical. That is not for you to tell me. If I say it can be done, then it can. Grettir's eyes bulged. I could see that inside him tradition was fighting against itself over two opposing points of view. On the one hand, he knew that a slave should never be armed and taught how to fight. On the other, I was the son of his master, Kenrir the Villa. That meant that I was due respect and obedience. He nodded gruffly, accepting what I said. What you say is fair enough, Master Curdic. However, he continued in a smug tone, your father might have something to say about that. With a final glare at Aidan, he stomped off, carrying the rain clouds of gloom with him. We waited a heartbeat, and then I let out a long breath that I had been holding inside me. Edward chortled and slapped me on the back that I winced. Curdic, my lad, that took balls, balls of bloody iron, in fact. Cuthbert said nothing, and was shaking with the same anxiety he always had around Grettir, yet he nodded in agreement. Aidan was still kneeling, but he was not staring where Grettir had gone. Instead, he was looking at me, and for the first time, the look was not of loathing or mockery, but gratitude. Thank you, he said, as he picked himself up. Father, of course, sent for me immediately. He told me bluntly that no slave on his land was allowed to carry weapons or become a warrior. That is the tradition, so that is that. I told him that I thought tradition was a pile of fetid horse droppings, but that earned me a vicious slap across the cheek which sent me reeling. Tradition is everything, he bellowed. It tells us who we are and where we come from. Tradition, honour and fate, it is all men are. Lose sight of that, and we are nothing. Do you understand? Yes, father, I mumbled. Grettir knows all this. Grettir is a bit of an old battle-axe, father. Maybe he is, but he is still impressed by you today. That surprised me. I thought he went off in a huff. My father nodded, laughing now. Oh, he was as mad as a demon, but he soon calmed down. Grettir is the salt of the earth and a very good man to have on your side, but he expects someone to be in charge and give him the orders. Your grandfather or uncle in the past, then your brother, me, or you. He respects authority, but more than that, he demands authority. Leadership is not just a right. You must earn obedience and loyalty by taking command. Today was the first time he saw that in you, and he was impressed. I blushed slightly. Even so, don't get carried away. I rule here, and that means no more swords or practice for Aidan. Yes, father. But maybe something of Loki was about Aidan after all, and maybe some of that had rubbed off on me, Loki, the trickster and deceiver of the gods. So I knew, even as I promised it, that I was lying. Loki looked down upon me and laughed as I plotted and planned. Strange the way things go in life. Aidan had seemed to be an enemy, and someone who did not want me about. And I felt the same way about him. Now, Edward, Cuthbert and I were suddenly quite fond of the boy. Only a few days before, our teasing and name-calling had led him to being punished, and now his name-calling and challenges to us had made us want to be with him. So, we planned ways to smuggle swords and shields out to the woods, a little way from the villa. And he practiced with us, despite my father forbidding this. He was good with all the weapons when he got the chance, even, much to Edward's chagrin, the bow. However, it was with a sword that he excelled. We were ever watchful of Grettir and kept our eyes on the woods in case he or father would find us. One day, I was keeping watch whilst Aidan and Edward fought. Aidan was goading Edward by telling him that he was Owain, and Edward was Firebrand, and that soon he would be victorious. Suddenly, I saw the bushes move. Quick as lightning, I pushed Aidan into the undergrowth close at hand, and then signalled to the others to throw their swords away. We then stood, breathing quickly, and eyes fixed on the bushes. Yet, no one emerged, so Edward circled round to come at the suspicious thicket from the rear. Nothing happened for a good few minutes. Then we heard Edward give a loud bellow, and with a scream two girls came tumbling out of the bushes, Mildred and Edith. You were spying on us, I accused them. Mildred stood up and glared at me indignantly. No, we weren't. We were, Mildred replied with some hesitation. Picking fruit, suggested Edith. Mildred nodded vigorously. I looked at the hazel thicket doubtfully. It's midwinter, and that is a hazel tree. There is no fruit anywhere. Oh, that explains it then, Edith said with a giggle. Yes, no wonder we did not find any, Mildred added. It's an easy mistake to make. Anyone could make it, Cuthbert said to my sister. She smiled back at him, and I sighed. One day my friend might get the courage to say something about his feelings for her. Just then, the winter sun broke through the dark clouds, lighting up the glade. It caught Edith's red hair, and I felt my throat go dry. Maybe one day I would get the courage up as well, I thought. With a crunching of leaves and the snapping of branches, Aidan pulled himself back out of the bush. I think you would give a man some warning, he complained, spitting out holly leaves. Then he saw Mildred and Edith, and he smiled at my sister. Mildred looked surprised. Like me, she was not used to seeing him do this. After a moment, she smiled back. Hello, Aidan. You with the boys? No, I said quickly. Yes, said Aidan, just as quickly, striking a manly pose with the sword he carried. Mildred giggled. Well, don't let father catch you, will you? She said, with a wink, and then dragged Edith away. As they left, I noticed that Cuthbert was studying Aidan, his eyes narrowed and dangerous. I smiled to myself. So then, Cuthbert has a rival, I thought, and Cuthbert knew it too. Oh well, it might do him some good. Lila came to us again at the start of the spring. He brought shocking news from distant Regid. What Aidan had jokingly predicted had come true. Lila had the lights extinguished in the barn, save one that lit up his face, and he spoke in a sombre, mournful tone. The warlord Owain ambushed the great firebrand in a rocky, barren land. His army was surrounded as it passed through the mountains and slain to a man. Last to die was the great warlord himself. 10 score he killed before they killed him, but die he did, pierced by many blades and arrows. A groan broke out across the barn as we took in what he had just said. Firebrand, the great Anglo-Saxon warlord who had kept the Welsh on the back foot for many years, was dead. The lands he had conquered and occupied, Lila told us, had now risen up in rebellion. Venetian laws vied for power and a civil war broke out. But that war did not last long, for Firebrand had an heir. His son, Ethelfrith, was as strong and fierce as his father and had put down the rebellions and civil war with vengeance. The shocks of the campaigns in the north and west were felt even in the villa. During this time, Dara remained neutral in the struggles and concentrated on assimilating the new lands King Aela had conquered years before. However, the fighting in the north drove scores of people south. Thus, leaderless men and bandits, deprived of land and livelihood, came to Dara, and the countryside became a dangerous place. Small groups of travellers, and in particular traders, were their prey, and the people soon became afraid to travel. The king took action and called up the fjord, the local levy of a portion of the warriors in each district, and set them to clearing woods and abandoned farmsteads of the bandits. So it was that Cuthwin went off to fight. He was passing 22 at the time. Father gave him my uncle's sword to carry. He left, tall and proud, leading 2 other youths from the village and accompanied by Grettir, and was gone for many months. When he returned, late in the summer, he bore several scars and told of skirmishes and battles amongst the wolds. Once again my spirit burned with longing to take my place in the sagas. The villa seemed dull indeed compared to these strange and exciting places. In the end, bandits had been dispersed or slain, and the king discharged the fjord. The sword was hung up again in the villa, and we went back to daily life as farmers, expecting that peace would last. This was not to be. When Yule time came, and we feasted on roasted lamb and beef and drank the best ale and mead to stave off the winter cold, Lila came again to stay with us. His courage rising after the victory over Benicia, Owain of Regid had, so Lila had heard, been gathering an army. It was not just from Regid over the mountains to the west, but from other Welsh lands like nearby Elmet and more distant Manu Gododdin up towards the lands of the Picts. For all these are in fact one race and one people. Owain would unite them all and lead them all against his enemies, Lila said, standing in front of the fire, so that he again cast disturbing shadows on the walls of the barn. I cannot say in truth who their intended enemy is, he went on, but my heart tells me it is we Angles he aims to attack. we Angles. He meant slowly recovering Bernicia, weakened and broken by civil war. Ordera, the land of farms and market towns, which had not fought a war in my lifetime. Both vulnerable kingdoms. Both might struggle to raise enough spears to oppose such a horde. Both were ripe for invasion. War was coming. My heart told me that this was the last winter of my youth. Fool that I was then, I felt joy in a desperate yearning for the glory of battle. If I knew what was to happen soon, I should instead have felt dread. Chapter 4. Hussar's Grudge. War was coming, and King Ailer had sent word that all areas should arm and train the Fjord, and be prepared for battle when and if it should come. In our area of southwest Deira, the responsibility lay with Lord Wallace of Wixton, and he took to the task with vigour. Outside of the town, there were a dozen or so villages like ours under his lordship. Each of these would be called upon to provide him with a handful of warriors. The villa and Curdham contributed the single largest contingent outside the town, with 12 men and boys, old enough and fit enough for duty. Wallace kept the local warriors training while he gathered arms and equipment. He also sent word that there would be a gathering of the entire Wixton Company in a few weeks. My father had agreed to hold this at the villa, where there was space for us to learn to fight as one company. Prince Ethelric, the son of the king, was coming to inspect us. This time of year was not a popular one to be taking men away from the land, as it was spring and a time to be ploughing, sowing and planting. Wallace told my father that he had had some resistance to his call to gather at the villa, but this summons had the authority of the king behind it, and come they would. Father and Grettir were determined that Cuthwin, myself and the others would put on a good display, and so kept us practising late into the spring evenings after the work on the fields was done for the day. So, one evening in Weedmanap, the first month of the spring when the rains came and the weeds grew fast, Grettir had gathered together the men and boys from the villa. Some from Wixton had also been sent over to learn from the veteran. We were being taught about spears and stood in an arc around him in a clearing in the woods west of the villa. The day had been particularly hot, and so we took shelter under the outspread branches of an oak tree that Carefit had once told me dated back to the years when the Romans lived in the villa. "Whilst the sword is often the mark of rank and wealth, it is the spear that defines a warrior. Slaves cannot bear arms. If a man owns a spear, he must be a free man," Grettir was saying, looking at me, making me wonder how much he knew, or thought he knew, about us and Aidan. He was holding a spear made of ash, topped with an iron head shaped like a leaf. The opposite end of the spear was capped with an iron ferrule. "There are two ways to use a spear," Grettir went on. He put the spear down against the gate and picked up a mock version. He also picked up a shield and indicated that I should do likewise. I assumed the warrior's pose and braced the shield. "I can hold the spear over arm, gripped about halfway down its length." He raised his right arm straight up and angled the spear end slightly downwards. "Thus I can attack over the foe's shield against his face and upper body, or," he said, dropping his right arm down and bending the elbow, "you can hold it under arm. The shaft is grasped further back and supported against the forearm. This method gives you better reach, and you can have more strength against the point. You can use the spear to knock aside the enemies or to push against his shield and force him back." As he said this, he pushed the spear against my shield, and I had to shift my weight to keep my position. "But, clearly, it is more difficult to wound your foe, protected as he is." Grettir turned and leant the spear and shield against the trunk of the tree, and then turned back to us. "Now, break up into pairs and practice," he instructed. Cuthbert, ever the optimist, paired up with Edward. I turned my head away, but was not surprised to hear, a few moments later, a dull thud and a yelp of pain from Cuthbert as yet again he was beaten by my other friend. Cuthbert's best chance was using his natural agility to protect himself. However, he always tried to stand up like a warrior from the sagas, usually to unfortunate results. Smiling to myself, I looked around for a partner. Of the lads present, all had paired up apart from a red-headed youth. I nodded at him and walked over. He looked familiar. Then I realised, with a start, that this was the same youth I had seen every autumn over the last several years, standing beside the road in Wixton, and again near the blacksmith about 6 months before. His hair seemed to be getting redder, if anything. "Hello, I'm Curdick. It looks as if we'll have to pair up. Who are you, then?" The boy did not reply at first. He studied me for a moment, then shrugged before finally answering. "I'm Hussa," he mumbled. He might have said more, but at that point Grettir appeared at my elbow and shouted at us, "Stop talking and practice! Don't think I won't make you run to the Humber and back, master's son or not!" I looked at Hussa and quickly took up my spear and shield and prepared to advance on him. I moved forward, feinting a thrust with the spear in order to draw his shield to his left, and then quickly pushing forward with my own in an attempt to slam it into his unprotected side. Hussa, however, was too quick for me. He stepped back, allowing me to stumble past him, and then rammed into me with his own shield, sending me tumbling to the ground. Then the red-headed lad followed up and jabbed the wooden spear into my ribs. Nearby I heard a clapping of hands as his manoeuvre was appreciated by Grettir. I got up and rubbed my bruised side. I nodded at Hussa. "Nice move," I said. Hussa did not acknowledge the compliment, but looked about him as if seeing if his fellows from Wixton had noticed. "Ah," I thought, "perhaps vanity might be a weakness in this one. I'll remember that." "It seems noble blood or not, you can be beaten, Master Kurdic," he muttered, emphasising my rank in a way that left me in no doubt that he did not respect me in the least. I tried to ask him what I had done to offend him, but Grettir again appeared and urged us back into the mock fight. Hussa proved a skilled opponent. Maybe he was not strong like Edward or agile like Cuthbert. He was, however, cunning and surprised me more than once with a sudden change of attack. It was a little before dusk when Grettir called us together. "You've done well today, lads. You all deserve ale and meat. Even Cuthbert here," he grinned at the rather bruised Cuthbert, who looked surprised. But then again, I think this was the first praise Grettir had heaped upon him. After a moment, he grinned back. As I watched the group disperse, I suddenly realised that Edward and Cuthbert were not the boys I once knew. We were growing up, and were now almost the warriors we had always dreamed about. I had longed for the day to come when I would go away to fight, but now it seemed certain that we would. I began to think about how I would react when battle came at last. Idly, I thrust my spear forward in a heroic stance, imagining myself, as I often did, as a hero. I was roused from my daydreams by a sarcastic taunt from behind me. "The great warrior, huh?" It was Hussa. I turned to see him 20 yards away, lurking in the shadows beneath the beech tree. I walked over to him. "Hussa, what is it with you? I never done you wrong, so why do you sneer and snarl at me like this?" Hussa stared back at me through dark eyes, hiding, so it seemed, an ocean of hate. His face was still blank, expressionless. "Oh no, you've never done any wrong. How could you, the beloved son of your father, ever do wrong? But your father, ah, that's another tale," he replied. "My father? What's this to do with my father?" "It has everything to do with your father. How it angers me to see him strutting around as a lord and a close friend to Lord Wallace, even due to play host to the prince tomorrow. Yet, if we go back 17 years, he was a philanderer and a seducer of women. Women who saw in his strong muscular form something they yearned for. Women like my mother." "What are you saying, Hussa?" I demanded. "Were you hit in the head today? Certainly you don't seem to be thinking straight. What I'm saying is your father is also my father. I was born from a summer's fling. Your dear beloved father mated with my mother when your mother was with child. With you." I stared at him, unable to accept what he was saying. "No, it's not true," I exclaimed, shaking my head. "Why do you think your father gives us food? Your mother found out and insisted that he cut all ties with my mother. Wallace discovered about it as well, and it was agreed that it would all be kept a secret if your father would supply food and other goods during each fjorm. Mother and I always hoped that one day he would recognise us, but, as you will recall, he still refuses to even talk to me." He turned away, hiding the tears that had come to his eyes. So, this is what those deliveries of food down that side lane had been about all those years. But if my father was Hussa's as well, well, that made us half-brothers. Hussa was the rejected son, turned away from the family and deprived of the affection and warmth I had known as a child. I could see why that would anger him. "Hussa, I'm sorry. Maybe though I can talk to father and he will, oh, I don't know, be kinder to you and your mother." Hussa laughed hollowly at that and still faced away from me. "For some of us, that would be too late," he said. "Why?" "Because my mother died last winter with a fever. Your father never sent us a message, the bastard." "Hussa, I'm sorry. I really didn't know," I said, and his head snapped round to look at me. A scowl came to his face, giving it at least some animation. "I don't want your sympathy, Kurdic, from you least of all," he said. "Hussa, I said I'm sorry, but we don't need to be enemies. Ah, but we do. For two people share of pain and rejection for 17 years, we do. For what I could have been, the son of a lord, not the bastard of a peasant, we do. It's your fault, Koenig. Ah, to hell with you. His voice trailed off. After glaring at me a moment longer, he turned and went away, leaving me staring after him, wanting to say something, but not really sure what. The day of the muster came at last, and we were kept busy from early dawn getting the villa ready. Prince Ethelric was coming, and like everyone else, he would be staying the night. My parents gave their room, the largest and best in the villa, over to him. It had to be swept clean, and Mildred and Suniva were sent to the river to collect fresh rushes, and Edith to the meadows to pick new flowers to perfume the room. I was ejected from my room, which I shared with Cuthwin, and that was given to my parents, whilst Lord Wallace got Mildred's room. She was moving in with Suniva for the night. Cuthwin and I would be finding a bed in the barn with the rest of the company.
"Not that I expect we'll get much sleep tonight, Koenig," Cuthwin said. "Far too much ale to be drunk."
At this moment, Edith passed by with the flowers, and I let my gaze linger on her as she walked by.
"Maybe tonight you won't get sleep for another reason, eh, brother?"
Cuthwin said with a wink and an elbow in the ribs. I was still looking the way Edith had gone, suddenly aware that there was more to being a man than just swords. Maybe tonight I would be lucky, I thought. Two lambs and a calf were slaughtered in a huge fire pit dug to roast the animals, which was suspended over it. They would roast all day and be ready for hungry men at nightfall. At noon, the men started to drift in from the villages, followed soon after by Lord Wallace, who was mounted and leading his 30 warriors from the town. We joined them in a field, and for the first time, just short of 100 men were gathered, all armed with spears, axes and knives, and carrying shields. A few had armour, and even fewer swords. They looked tatty and far from ready for war, but this, what was to be known as the Wixton Company, would, before the first leaves of autumn fell, and with me in its ranks, achieve glory and fame amid the blood and horror of a battlefield. The naive youth that I was would have been thrilled to know this. Now that I knew the truth, when I thought back on that summer, a lump came to my throat. For the truth is that half these men would be dead or wounded before those same leaves fell.